We are in our series, second part of our series called Invite and Serve, tagline there, Salvation by Faith and Hospitality. And before I get any further, I got some feedback from last week's sermon about how there was maybe a little bit of confusion coming about as I talked. The line faith and hospitality actually comes from an early church writing from the book of, from the Epistle of Clement from Rome to the Corinthians. And I got some feedback that's maybe caused a bit of confusion, particularly for people who have a Roman Catholic background. I don't have a Roman Catholic background, and I wasn't necessarily aware of that cultural element. And so I want to apologize for any confusion from the sermon from last week. And it's definitely not my intention to do that. You guys deserve a clear communication, and I will do my best moving forward to be more clear in the points that I'm trying to get across. And so please forgive me for that as we move forward into the rest of this series. No more quotations from Clement. It's all the Bible from here. And although, in my defense, I did preach from the Bible last week as well. Okay, so but this is kind of what we're talking about. Today we're going to be last week we looked at the tight connection between faith and hospitality. This week we're looking at the God of the banquet. And the point I was trying to make in what I was saying last week is that saving faith produces the fruit of hospitality. There's a whole spectrum of ideas of what faith is. Some people think and grow up, growing up in the church, I shared a story, I didn't know what faith was. People kept on talking about faith and it just kind of seemed like belief. If I believed in God, then that's okay. If I believe in God, when I die, I'll go be in heaven. If I believe I have this get out of hell free card, then that's fine. If I believe in Jesus, then that's enough. Well, of course, belief in Jesus is the starting point of faith, but it's like a seed that's planted. It produces fruit. Saving faith biblically must produce fruit, and it produces the fruit of hospitality, as well as all the other fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. You put them all together, and you get this idea of faith and hospitality, that one is the root and the other is the fruit, that they're two sides of the same coin. And I was making the point last week about how we have our own cultural ideas of what hospitality is. We meet in a hotel, don't we? This is kind of like the hospitality industry. And we might fall into the trap of thinking that hospitality is something that is an industry, that it's necessarily transactional or commercial. But hospitality is not transactional. It's not commercial. And the point I was trying to make last week is that hospitality is actually deeply, deeply relational. What Clement was talking about, he comments on three stories of hospitality in the Bible. Of Abraham receiving three strangers, of Lot receiving two strangers, of Rahab receiving the spies who were strangers to her. And that biblical hospitality isn't about welcoming people that we know into our house. It's about welcoming people that we don't know. Biblical hospitality is actually for strangers. So that even challenges our modern concept of what hospitality is. Hospitality is deeply relational, so much so that strangers can become friends. That's the whole point of biblical hospitality. And I shared a little testimony of the Korean man that I met at Melbourne University. He flew from Korea to Melbourne Airport to Melbourne University, and was trying to establish his life. But I don't know why he chose Melbourne University, but he ran into me and I was helping him out, and I invited him back and he stayed at our place for like a week. And then 2 weeks ago, he sent me a message saying, Ken, I'll never forget. I'm married now. I've served in the armed forces. I've been to China. I've been to Japan. And now, I can't wait to come and visit you. I told my wife about what you did for me, and she couldn't believe it. And we want to come, and we want to, we're friends. And it's like, yeah, that's right. That's what biblical hospitality is. We welcome in strangers so that they can become friends. Biblical hospitality, it's not commercial. It's not comfortable. There's an element of risk that comes alongside with it. And maybe you're not at a place where you can invite a stranger into your house, but can you invite a stranger into your life? It still won't be comfortable, because biblical hospitality is not commercial. It's not comfortable, but it is covenantal. It's about relationship. I made this point that biblical hospitality saves. Salvation by faith and hospitality. Biblical hospitality saves. Abraham's, Lot's life was saved. His and his family. His and his daughters, I should say, were saved because of the hospitality that he showed to the angels who came to Sodom. We read in Ezekiel that the sin of Sodom wasn't so much sexual perversion as it was a lack of hospitality. Or Rahab, her life and the life of her family, it was saved because she showed hospitality to the spies who came. Rahab goes on to be one of the ancestors of Jesus in the genealogies of Jesus because she showed hospitality. Biblical hospitality saves. We see that in Abraham in Genesis 18, in Lot in Genesis 19, and in Rahab in Joshua chapter 2. And I make this point, biblical hospitality still saves today. Isn't that what this city needs? A demonstration? You know, when we love people, when we love people who aren't like us, when we love people who we don't even know, then we show the city of Melbourne that we don't just believe in Jesus with our mind. We believe in him with our mind. Yes, that's just the beginning of the journey. We give our hearts to him. We love him with our hearts and we serve him with our hands and with our time and with our finances and our resources. And then it goes beyond just being, you know what? Yeah, that's a religion that, you know, you can believe that, you can think that, but it's like, you know what? I can see that you have a relationship with Jesus that is changing the way you interact with others. It's changing the way you interact with me. That's the greatest apologetic argument, isn't it? Loving people. Biblical hospitality saves, and biblical hospitality is still saved today. That's what this city needs. Biblically, people who serve God serve others. If we want to serve God, we do that not primarily by coming to church and giving our tithes, that's part of it, but we do it by serving others in the name of God. And we do that because God shows himself to be the God of hospitality. Biblically, people who serve God serve others because this is who God shows himself to be. God's revealed himself. I keep on using the word biblically. All throughout the Bible, God reveals himself to be a God of hospitality, a God who welcomes, a God who invites and serves. Can we be a church like our God? Can we be a church who invites people? Maybe the church, yes, but more than that, invite them into our life, invite them into our life so we can serve them. That's what Jesus has done for us, right? Mark chapter 9, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. I mean, we see this in the Bible in the fact that God creates, right? He is the creator. He creates the entire universe. He creates the context. He creates the stage and he invites us to be participants in his great play. He creates all of creation and he makes us to have a place in it. He welcomes us into his great creation. The ultimate in inviting and serving is creation. God serves us by creating all of this. Then he places us in it. He makes, he invites, he provides. All that we have. Isn't a good host someone who provides something for you? You know, a friend invites you over for dinner. You know, a good friend invites you over to dinner and they cook a nice dinner. A bad friend tells you to bring KFC. Come over to my place, you bring the KFC and I'll have free KFC. That's a friend that's not going to be a friend for very long, right? But God creates everything. He invites us to be part of it and then he provides for us in it. You know, so we just... Leviticus 25, verse 23. The land, this is, this is God giving laws for the promised land. This is a land, this is a gift that he's giving, yes, but the land must not be sold permanently because the land is mine. God created it. You know, who owns land here in Melbourne? Who wants to own land here in Melbourne? Do you truly own it? Is it truly yours? I mean, by the law of Australia, yes, it is, but who really owns it? The land is mine and you reside in my land, as foreigners and strangers. So I'm welcoming you in, but this is my house. This belongs to me, but you're welcome in it. God creates creation and invites us and serves us, and he provides for us. You know, Psalm 24 verse 1, Paul also quotes this in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. This is all basic, but creation is the ultimate act of hospitality, right? But not just creation at a grand scale, you know, this transcendent, impersonal scale. It's not just at the big picture level, but as you zoom all the way in, it's deeply covenantal. God's hospitality is deeply covenantal. It's personal. God is the banquet maker, and God invites individuals to eat with him. Throughout the Bible, we have this theology of God and meals. You know, it was a meal that kicked us out of the garden. But what do we celebrate at the end? The marriage supper of the Lamb. From one meal that is rebellious to another meal that redeems everything. And then we have, you know, all sorts of, you know, Jesus sacramentalizes a meal. Isn't that what communion is? A love feast. We get together and there's something deeply spiritual and powerful in that meal. God is the banquet maker. So, you know, there's, I don't know if you ever picked this up, but I did, and maybe you have too. Just reading in the book of Exodus, it talks about Moses says, God, show me your glory. And God says, this is Exodus chapter 33. Moses says, show me your glory. And God says, no. You know what? I'm going to have to put you in the cleft of the rock. I'm going to walk past you. I'm going to declare my name, but you can't see my face because you'll die. And, you know, I think in James it talks about no man may see God's face and live. And but you know what? It's interesting because in Exodus chapter 24, there's a kind of a mystery here, a contradiction. In Exodus 24, God has a meal with Moses. But not just with Moses, he has a meal with the 70 elders of Israel. They see his face. That's what it says. They see his face and they ate and drank with him. God made a banquet for Moses. God made a banquet for the 70 elders of Israel as he is ratifying, as he is confirming his covenant with them. Who wants to be at that meal? Who thinks the food is good there? You know, maybe Gordon Ramsay could learn something from him. I'm not sure. But if you're a Christian, you will be at that meal one day. If your faith is more than just belief, but something that has taken root in you and produces fruit that changes your life and the life of people around you, then you will partake of that meal one day. God is the banquet maker. He invites people to sit and eat with him. I mean, this is a famous scripture, Psalm 23. You prepare a feast before me in the plain sight of my enemies. You refresh my head with oil. My cup is completely full. Surely your goodness and faithfulness will pursue me all of my days, and I will live in the Lord's house for the rest of my life. This is God invites the sheep into his house to dwell and to live in forever. He welcomes them in. He doesn't just feed them. He refreshes them, pours oil over them to cleanse them, to provide for them. But he also prepares a feast. God is the banquet maker. God is the God of hospitality. He prepares a banquet for you, for me. He prepares a banquet. God invites individuals. He prepares a banquet for the nations. God invites nations to eat with him. Isaiah. Oh, that's right. I just didn't change the thing at the bottom. This is Isaiah 25, verse 6. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. This is Isaiah 25. Now it's verse 8. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. In that day, they will say, surely this is our God. We trusted in him and he saved us. This is the Lord. We trusted in him. Let us rejoice and be glad in his salvation. God prepares a banquet for the nations. You know, some people, when you read Isaiah, there's a real change in the first, like, verses, chapters 1 to 39, and then chapters 40 to 66. There's like a, it's kind of like, some people think there was even two authors because there's such a change in tone. It's so much more triumphant and hopeful from chapters 40 onwards. But this is in the first part, the depressing part, the part that's all about judgment. Like, the first 39 chapters seem to be all about judgment. But there's two chapters in the middle, chapters 24, 25 and 26, that bring hope. And this is it. This is the first chapter. It talks about, on this mountain, Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine. God prepares a feast. He's the banquet maker. He's the God of hospitality. So in the Bible, God reveals himself as the God who invites and serves. This is who he does. He creates creation and provides for us. And it's his house, but he lets us use it. He's the ultimate host. He's the God who looks after his sheep and brings them into his house that they may dwell in it forever. He anoints their head with oil. He prepares a banquet for them in the presence of their enemies. He's the God who invites the nations, the people of Israel plus everyone else, to feast on meat. This is proof that God's not vegetarian, right? The finest of meats, the best of wines. He's also not a teetotaler. And if you're a vegetarian and a teetotaler, that's fine. I'm not having a go at you. I've got to learn to stop making jokes, okay? Because someone will get offended. I have to apologize again. God reveals himself as a God who invites and serves. And he empowers us to do the same. You have the power by the Spirit of God to invite people into your life and to serve them. God, he empowers us to do the same. His people are empowered to do the same. You know, God's empowered me to do that. God's empowered me to invite people into my life and to serve them. You know, my wife and I, we have had hundreds of people through our house. You know, 200 maybe. So that's hundreds. If not hundreds, then scores. We have had hundreds of people through our house. You know what? It's not even a nice house. It's an old house. It's got cracks in the wall. Bits of the roof are falling off. I haven't mowed the lawn this year. It is, you know, our vacuum cleaner's not working at the moment, so the floor's a bit dusty. We haven't got nice furniture. My sister, she can't handle the couches that we have anymore. She's buying us new couches. But we still invite people over to our house. You know, and we're lucky that we have a house, right? And we're lucky where we live, but it's not a pretty house. But we've invited hundreds of people there. You know what? I'm not an extrovert. I don't like spending time with people. I don't particularly, it's not my thing. You know, for some people, it's really their thing. Just they just want to party all the time and have people over, and it's great. You know what? I just want to be by myself most of the time. I love my private space. Maybe I love it too much. Sometimes I just kind of want to lock myself away. I just want to be away from the world. Nonetheless, don't have a nice house. I've got four kids running around, screaming, interrupting me, fighting at each other over who's going to play the computer. And, you know, actually my kids are pretty good, so that is a bonus. You know, we've had hundreds of people through our house. It's not even a nice house. I'm not an extrovert. I love my private space. But you know what? I know how to serve. I know how to serve people. Because God served me. This is the way it tends to work. I'm not really good at inviting people, but God's connected me with someone, Kira, who's very good at inviting people. So Kira invites people over, And once they're in my house, somehow, maybe it's the God of hospitality takes me out of my own little introvert safe space. It says, Ken, if I'm the God of hospitality, I want you to be hospitable. Ken, if I'm the God who invites and serve, I want you to invite and serve. Well, I want you to serve. Kira invites people over. My kids invite people over. They invite and I serve. Maybe you're introverted here. Maybe you're the introverted part of a couple. Let your extroverted other half invite people over. You serve them when they come in. You know, there's one, my kids invite people over. There's one boy who comes over. Like, he lives at our house. So Kira, she was driving to school one morning and she saw a family, an Indian family, Hindu family, walking, going to school, and it was raining, and they were getting rained on. She offered to pick them up, so she served them. And then she started inviting them over. And when this young boy started coming over, I was really annoyed. It's quite annoying, actually. There's a certain way that things need to be done in my house. There's a certain way I expect children to act. And he didn't act that way, and he did the things that I didn't want to be done in my house. But God, hospitality, somehow can use someone like me to serve someone, a young boy, who I initially found annoying. And so he'll come over most mornings before the kids go to school. He'll probably come over tomorrow morning, right? But he'll hear me pray the Johnston family prayer. We have a Johnston family prayer. And then I clued him in it. He's part of our family prayer. Dear Jesus, thank you for positioning the Johnston family and XYZ, this boy's name. Thank you for positioning the Johnston family and Bob. His name's not Bob. Thank you for positioning the Johnston family and Bob to serve and encourage and to be blessed more and more each and every day. Amen. It's the prayer we pray and we include him in it, because it's, I serve a God who invites and serves. How do I serve when Kira invites some mums from school over? Well, I serve by showing interest. I talk to them. I ask questions. I might have a million things to do. I might be worried about all sorts of different things that are going on in my life. I might have a whole bunch of stresses. I might be going through all sorts of different things. You know what? And I do. I go through a whole bunch of different things. But when people come over, when Kira invites them, I serve them by taking interest in them and asking them questions. Hey, how are you? What do you do? Where are you from? Where did you grow up? What do you like to do for fun? Have you traveled? Where's your favorite place? I get my kids to ask them creative questions. This is one of the things I train my kids to do. Can you ask a creative question to our guests? And I try to come up with creative questions. I'm always thinking of different creative questions so I can engage with people and talk to them. People love it when they engage with you. When you engage with them, when you show interest in them, it's the easiest way to serve, to listen to them. I serve by showing interest, by asking questions, getting my kids to ask them questions, engaging in conversation. And of course, if I serve the God of the banquet by providing food and drink, hey, can I make you a coffee? Would you like something to eat? I can fry up some eggs, make some toast, got some bacon. I don't do that often. But you know, there's one guy who came over. An atheist. He married a friend of ours who's a Christian, and they were both over. And I'm just sitting there chatting, you know, serving them at our house, our non-nice house with crummy couches and cracks in the wall and an overgrown lawn. All that stuff. See, the reason why I say that is that we can come up with all sorts of reasons not to invite people over. I can't invite people over to my small apartment. I can't invite people over to my unclean house. You know, there is, our dishwasher doesn't work at the moment. Hasn't worked for like about, when I say at the moment, I mean the past 6 months. So our dishwasher doesn't work. And so we often have just dishes packed up high. Does that stop me from inviting people over? It probably should. But we still invite them over. And I'm just, hey, sorry about the dishes, you know, I'll get around to it some point, whenever. But I talk to them. So the reason why I go through all that is because there's so many easy excuses. We can just fall into the trap of saying, you know what, X, Y, and Z, not inviting anyone over. Don't feel like it. Too tired. I'm an introvert. So we had this guy over, and he's an atheist. And I heard God say to me, Ken, I want you to ask him about his spiritual journey. Because he's married a Christian. Ken, I want you to ask him about his spiritual journey. And this was my response to God. Nah, I'm not going to do that. just as blatant rebellion as eating the forbidden fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. No, God, I'm not going to do that. Just in my mind. Ken, I want you to ask him about his spiritual journey. He's like, he's an atheist. I don't want to ask him about his. I'm not going to do that. The next words out of my mouth were this. So tell me about your spiritual journey. I had zero intention of doing that. From my internal conversation of, nah, I'm not going to do that, to the spoken words of, so tell me about your spiritual journey. Why would I do that? Why am I sharing that story? Why did I share the story of the boy who comes over that annoys me, annoyed me to begin with? It's because God uses imperfect people. God uses people who are annoyed at little children. God uses people who upright want to rebel against him and say, no, I'm not going to do that, to invite and insert and serve other people. He's the God of hospitality, the God of the banquet, and he will work for his people, sometimes even against their will. But I've learned that if that's who God is, then what I'm going to do is I am going to not work against him, I want to work with him. If God can use me when I don't want to be used by him, how much more can he use me when I do want to be used by him? If God can use me despite my shortcomings, despite my reluctance, despite my lack of resources, he can use you. We serve a God who invites and serves. I want to invite Caleb to come on up. I've shared a whole bunch of different things. And go, oh, you know, Ken, this is your job to do this and X, Y, Z. But Caleb, I've been journeying a little bit with Caleb. Caleb is only new here to Australia. You've been here since like the end of July, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I mean, I suppose in my mind, I thought I'll get someone up who's new to Australia, and we've been journeying. So I know some of the stories, and probably I know a little bit about what you're going to share. But I mean, if anyone had an excuse not to invite people over or to connect or to serve, or then it'd be you guys, you and Casey. You're setting up a new life. You're newly married. You're setting up a new life for yourselves in a new country, and all that kind of stuff. But I've really been super impressed by just your heart to invite and serve others. So if you want.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, guys. So I'm Caleb. Hospitality is actually something that I've been trying to practice in my life for like a couple years now. So yeah, I thought I'd just share some stories about like my own experiences, like good and bad, practicing hospitality. So I'm a student at the University of Melbourne, and I guess like I've found that hospitality can be just as much about your posture as about, you know, like actually inviting people to your house, right? So you know, I'm in a program that's mostly international students, mostly people who aren't from Australia, kind of feel out of place here, or like they don't belong, which, you know, I can relate to. Like I'm not from Australia. This isn't my home. And, you know, so I think, you know, what God has really laid on my heart is, it's so easy for us to just be in our own like little group. We just hang out with the people who are from the same country as we are, speak the same language, you know, think the same way. But to just be really intentional about, you know, searching out the people who don't belong or don't think they belong, and including them, right? Because that's what God did for me. You know, I didn't belong in the kingdom of God, but he made me welcome. And so, like, what that looks like for me very often is just being, like, vulnerable with people. And so, you know, there's kind of a lot of posturing, right, in the professional world, and you kind of want to put on this, like, professional image and look like you have it all together. You know, and to some extent, that's fine, right? But it's also, you know, isolating, right? Because you can't actually tell people, you know, how you're doing. You know, when they ask, you have to say, oh, you know, that's good. But, you know, just to be, you know, comfortable enough as a Christian, you know, to say, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I'm struggling in this course, you know, like, I'm worried that, you know, I'm not smart enough, you know. Oh, yeah, how were you this weekend? Well, actually, my marriage is, like, kind of hard, you know. And that kind of takes people aback, you know. They're like, what, you know? Like, you don't have it all together, you know. But that's just a way for me to, you know, make room for them in my life and to say, like, you know, like, I don't have it all together, but, you know, let me tell you, like, what God has made possible in my life. And, yeah, things are difficult a lot. But, you know, God has helped me, and I just want to share that with you. So that's kind of the posture that I try to like, walk with, like, day by day. So just invite people into, like, my own struggles, even, you know, like, sometimes I have something encouraging to say, but sometimes it's just sharing my own, you know, stories of, like, man, this was a difficult situation that God helped me through, and just being, like, vulnerable in that way. So that's one thing I wanted to share with you guys is just sometimes it's just as simple as being honest enough to make, you know, like, emotional space in your life, right? And I also wanted to share a story, maybe just to encourage you not to give up. So when I first started, I don't know, feeling like God calling me to practice hospitality, I was living in Portland, Oregon. And there was this, homeless man who just, like, wandered around my neighborhood all the time. I just felt like God was really saying, like, yeah, this is the guy that I'm calling you to serve and to love. Myself and my roommates at the time, we made a real intention, like, okay, we're going to invite this guy into our lives, and we're going to love him, you know, even though he's nothing like us, right? And I think I had these really high expectations at first. I was like, all right, this, you know, this homeless man who's struggling with, like, extreme poverty, you know, drug addiction, mental health, you know, and, like, you know, a couple times coming to my house is going to be, like, all turned around. It's going to have this perfect life, you know, and it's going to be this awesome testimony that I can share. And that didn't happen. You know, like, I invited this guy, you know, over and over to our house, and we'd pray for him. You know, we'd just do everything that we could to, you know, give him clothing, just listen to his story, because he had, you know, just a wild story. And to just, you know, make room in our lives to love this man who'd been through some really horrible things, which, you know, did a lot to, you know, convict me of my own pride and arrogance and change a lot of my own sin, right? But on the surface, like, nothing seemed to change in his life. But I think that's where, like, faith comes in, is, you know, we're called to be faithful, you know, and how many times did God reach out to me or call me before, like, I took a step and I changed? And so I just want to encourage you that, you know, even if you don't see the fruit, you know, you're planting seeds and you're showing the love of God to people when you practice hospitality. And that's what you're called to do. And so, yeah, just continue to do that in prayer. Awesome. I think that's all I had to say.
Thanks, Caleb. That's awesome. And one thing, just as we've been journeying together, like, we catch up every couple of weeks at Melbourne Uni, Caleb was saying when he first moved into his apartment building how he went around and he just knocked on the doors of everyone who was around and said, hey, we've got a dessert party. Do you want to come over? And I thought, that's a man after my own heart, a dessert party. That's, well, how come I wasn't invited? But that's awesome. But, yeah, I love that concept of inviting people even into our struggles, our weakness, and making that space and room for them and letting the facade fall at times so that we can connect with people. That's awesome. Thanks, Caleb. Well, let me wrap up here. Mel, do you mind? Thank you, Mel. Just to wrap up, biblical faith leads to biblical hospitality. Faith that saves, faith that's more, that's moved beyond just belief, but is the seed that's been planted in our life, that's born forth the fruit of a changed life and of lives being changed around us. Biblical faith leads to biblical hospitality. biblical hospitality, saved in the time of the Bible, and it still saves now. You know, we hear testimonies of it now. I've got testimonies of people whose lives have been impacted because I invited them to our house that was built in the 1930s with its really long grass and cracks in the wall. Biblical hospitality saved then, and it still saves now. It's what our city needs. It's not more commercial hospitality, not more cultural hospitality where it's all about dinner parties that we throw for our friends, people who are just like us. What our city needs more of is biblical hospitality. The God of the Bible is the God of hospitality. He invented it. He invented it by creating the earth and then inviting us to be part of it, by making creation and providing a place for us in it. He invites us as individuals. He invites us as his people. He invites the nations. He is the God of the banquet who invites and serves individuals and nations. And I think that's what we're called to do, right? If he is our God and this is who he is like, then doesn't he also invite us? Doesn't he also empower us to invite and serve individuals? Maybe as Caleb's been saying, by not pretending to have it all together all the time. By allowing a young boy who initially annoys me to become part of our family and our morning ritual family prayer. Maybe he empowers us. Maybe he calls us to invite people over so that when he asks us to do something and we don't do it, God does it through us anyway. It's the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible is the God of hospitality. And he empowers us just as he does himself. He empowers us to invite and serve individuals and nations. And we have every opportunity to do that here in this city. To invite and serve individuals and nations. The nations are here. That's what makes Melbourne great. The God of the Bible empowers his people to be hospitable. The God of the Bible empowers his people to invite and serve. He empowers us to invite and serve individuals and nations in spite of our lack, what we perceive, all the different excuses or mountains that we might say. This is the reason why I can't invite someone into my life. He empowers us in spite of that, in spite of our lack, and he empowers us in spite of our shortcomings. My annoyance, my personality, my cultural insensitivity, whatever shortcomings I might have. Because he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he calls us to be like him a little bit more each and every day. So my prayer is that by this time next week, we'll be 7 days further advanced in our journey to be more like Jesus, more like the God of the Bible, the God of hospitality, the God of the banquet, the God who invites and serves. Pass over to Jen. Thanks, Jen.